Hello, and thank you for joining us today on the Gentle Art of Crushing It show, where we focus on learning and sharing with our listeners all there is to know about how to create success in our lives. This show stands on the shoulders of giants. Our mission is to empower and inspire our listeners to create the life of their dreams whilst having a blast in the process. Let's celebrate life together. Welcome to the show.
Welcome back to the Gentle Art of Crushing It podcast. My name is Randy Smith, and I will be your host today, and we're going to focus on all things passive investing. And we've got a really interesting guest today that has a very, very cool tool for the passive investor. Litan Yahav is the co-founder of Vizor, and their catchphrase is helping to keep passive investing passive. So, Litan, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Randy. I'm super excited to be here, and I love your title of your podcast, like The Art of Crushing It. Brilliant.
Love it. Love it. Awesome. Well, why don't we jump right in, Litan? Can you tell us a little bit about yourself and how you found yourself here today?
Sure. So personal aspect, I'm 41 years old, married. I have three kids, three rascal boys. I was born in the U.S., but when I was nine, we were on a trip around the world and ended up in Israel.
Wow.
And that's where I've been most of my life. Served in the Israeli Navy for 6 years. Went to school in Israel. Founded a startup 12 years ago that had a vision to create 3D images of diamonds for online trading purposes. So we built hardware and software for photographing diamonds in 3D and offered that as a service to the diamond industry for trading purposes around the world. And that scaled pretty well. And we exited and sold that company in 2015 and stayed on for 3 years during this earnout period. Usually what happens after you sell a startup, you'll stay in for a few, for like a period of time to make sure that things are, you know, continuing smoothly. And we continue to grow the business during those 3 years. And in 2018, we left, me and one of my co-founders. At that point, we were about 250 employees, essentially photographing all the diamonds in the world. Now that's a standard. Almost every diamond you'll see online is photographed with our tech, but we had enough of that industry. And, you know, set off to explore, you know, travel a bit with our families and explore different business ideas. And during the, you know, past 8 years since we sold the company, we made money. We didn't make tens of millions, but we made enough. Mm-hmm. And just started to deploy capital into private equity, real estate, startups, US, Europe, a bunch of different stuff. And at some point, about 4 years ago, it became a mess. You know, spreadsheets breaking and emails and cash and just good problems to have, but like a mess. Sure. And we built a platform for us to track and manage everything we have. And then that spun out to be a whole new startup because a lot of our friends wanted that as well. And then other people around the world, and specific in the US. And so we found Vizor about 3 years ago, to solve our issues and issues of people like us. And that's sort of the quick backstory of like me, my background, and how we came to where we are.
Awesome. Yeah. Thanks for walking through that. It's interesting to hear that you go from a startup where you're essentially creating something to do photography for diamonds, it sounds like, and then shifting over into supplying a tool in the passive investing space. It couldn't be at more opposite ends of the spectrum. That's so interesting. But I guess when it comes down to technology, you can do anything with it. So probably brings all kinds of options your way. So,
I mean, at the end of the day, these technology businesses for us are out of a need that we've identified in a market, either a personal need or a need that other people told us about. And we say, wait, that doesn't make any sense that this exists and there isn't a solution for it. Let's solve it. The previous business was like, we were just ignorant and didn't know what it even means because we did not have a background in the diamond industry, which gave us an advantage. And this business is like, this is our own issue. Like, we're building this for us. So we like understand the problem firsthand. And so it's, for us, it's like, it doesn't really matter the industry. It just matters the problem. If we relate to the problem, if the problem is big enough that it makes sense to solve, if you have the ability to solve it. So that's like what led us to build these two companies.
Yeah, so I'm curious with the diamond industry then, was it you guys were getting into the sale and trade of diamonds, so you needed some type of solution to do that? Or
no.
Don't just wake up one day and say, I'm going to go solve a problem. Like, how would you even know about the problem, right?
Right. So that's a great question. So during school, I went to college in Israel, And my last year of studies, I got into this entrepreneurship program funded by Sam Zell. And as part of this program, the first stage is, all right, let's find an idea, a problem to solve. And then, you know, let's just meet with a bunch of people to see what problems are out there. And a friend of a friend took us into the Diamond Exchange building in Israel. And we were like, holy crap. How does it even make sense that in the 21st century, this is how an entire industry works?
Yeah.
And so we did not have any desire to get into diamonds. We weren't trading that. We had no idea how this industry works until sort of this interview process of finding an idea and a problem to solve.
Interesting. Yeah. So you hear all the ads on TV and radio where, you know, Joe, who owns Joe's Diamond Shot just down the street, he goes over to Israel once a year or wherever he goes to go select diamonds for his store for the rest of the year. And it does not seem like an efficient process at all. I can't imagine a guy showing up with his little looking glass looking at all these diamonds. So it sounds like you guys created a solution that would help that process then. Okay.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. Very good. So you built a business, and not a small business either, 250 people. So coming out of business school and growing a business that size, clearly you're a smart guy and you've done a lot of big things up to this point. So I'm thinking of this transition where, as a passive investor, you've got the Excel sheet that's broken. I've got the same broken Excel sheet. I don't use Visor yet, I'll say. But there certainly was a need there. So with your experience looking at this market, is there a population that is looking for that solution, at least to build a business around it? My experience is that there are some passive investors out there, but I can't imagine the market's that large. So can you talk about that a little?
Sure. I'm just going to touch back on one thing you mentioned.
Sure.
I'm not a smart person, but I surround myself with smarter people, right? That's
perfect.
I'm more like, I know how to identify an opportunity and double down on that. That's like what me and my co-founder, what we aspire to. So when we built Visor for us, our initial assumption was, there's not a market for this. This is just us. Like, who else has these problems? Who else invests passively? Who else does that? Yeah, we'll just build it for us and have our own lifestyle. No, not even a business, just like platform for us to manage our stuff.
Yeah.
But then more and more people reached out to us and said, hey, we heard you're building this. Can we use it too? Mm-hmm. They were like, wait, let's hold on a second. And let's start to interview people. And we interviewed hundreds of people for like 6 months. Mm-hmm. Before even thinking of like, all right, let's turn this into a startup. Because one thing we understood is that, you know, in the US alone, there are about 25,000, you know, private equity firms, small GPs, large GPs, 25,000. That's a crazy number.
Yeah.
There are about 30 companies that all those companies do is provide a platform for these GPs to communicate with their LPs. Or, you know, like the Juniper Squares, the syndication for all those platforms.
Yeah.
And so it's like, wait, from a bottom-up approach, if there's so many of these GPs and so many of these companies that build services for GPs, there have to be a ton of LPs using it from the other side, right? You raise money from people. So there has to be enough people to invest if there weren't these amount of GPs. So if there's enough people that it makes sense to have 25,000 GPs, there have to be enough LPs that need a platform like Visor. That's a bottom-up approach. Now, a top-down approach is how many people in the market can even invest as an LP? When you look at the market, like anyone who's an accredited investor can essentially invest as an LP, right? So about 25 million accredited investors in the U.S., families.
Okay.
And so, you know, there's anywhere between, and our assumption was, if there are 25,000 GPs, there are going to be GPs that have 10 LPs, and there are going to be GPs that have 1,000 LPs.
Yeah.
Let's just say the middle is around 100. And so from a bottom-up approach, of 2.5 million LPs in the US, mm-hmm. and the high end are 25 million families or potential LPs. And so the number is that somewhere in the middle that are potentially for us. Now, you know, when you look at, you know, private banking or these, you know, big wealth management firms, they're not looking for millions of clients, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, tens of thousands is amazing for them. So we're looking for hundreds of thousands and to be this ultimate global multifamily office at some point.
Okay.
And for that type of service, there are people. And if we do it properly, then it's going to be a super profitable business.
Yeah. And it seems like a couple of things kind of come to mind. One is go to market. Do you go directly to the end user, or do you go to those 100 different software applications like the AppFolios or the Syndication Pros or all of those guys. Have you looked at partnering with them to offer a solution to their investors, or is that something that's just built into those tools already today?
So there's a conflict of interest there from their side, right? Because, you know, if I'm an LP investor, I don't care about all these logins the GP gives me. I don't want to log into all these portals. Yep. I want to log into one place and see what I have and get all my documents, my K-1s, my distribute everything in one place.
Yeah.
And so for them to provide an API or any type of integration or partner with a company like me, they're basically shooting themselves in the feet, because when they come and they sell their product to a capital raiser like you or to a GP or whatever it is, 50% of the presentation is, we have this amazing user interface, investor portal, like everything's super intuitive for your investors. But when you think about it, you know, us investors, I couldn't care less about the portal, because I never log into the portal. And even if I do, it's once a year to download my K-1. It's like, I just don't think that is a selling point. And so these portals are like, they don't really have an incentive to, we're trying, you know, there are the more progressive portals understand that if they want to survive, they need to, you know, be, you know, forward thinking and have more values and not just that core of providing to the GP.
Mm-hmm.
And so to your question, the distribution channels, that's not a distribution channel in our mind at the moment. It might be in the future. We do, you know, we have online acquisition, online marketing. We do some, we do ads on Facebook, Google, LinkedIn. We do some retargeting and stuff like that, which has been working really well. And we have affiliates that work with us. So, you know, we have people that are opinion leaders or financial publishers or bloggers that write stuff about, you know, investing and love what we're doing. And so they'll get compensated for every person that they, you know, send us as a sign up, as a paying client.
Okay.
And that's working amazing as well. And then we have partnerships, not with the portals, but more with the investor communities and GPs. Because here's the thing, like if you are in a specific investor community, or if you invest with a specific GP, and as the GP, you give, you know, some sort of added value to the LP, not just, you know, giving more returns, but more value, such as, here's a platform for you to streamline your wealth, and there's additional price, or even there are GPs that cover the price for the LPs.
Interesting. Yeah.
And there's a whole aspect of benchmarking in a portal, right? So our clients see anonymously where other people are investing, and that gives them more insights into, all right, which funds are good funds. And so, you know, if I'm a GP and I'm all for transparency, the more LPs who use Visor, the more that transparency is like expanded to everyone else in the portal, and that gives more credibility to the fund. And so there's a lot of different aspects to, you know, create partnerships. And also we create a lot of content. So there's like the fourth pillar of our distribution.
Interesting. So now I know there's a lot of platforms out there, or a lot of communities anyways, where they're trying to create kind of a grading scale for syndicators, for deals, for doing due diligence on operators. Is there anything in the construct that will have some type of rating scale on investments in the future to share that information, or is that kind of outside of the
100%. Okay. So here's the thing, right? So we share this data anonymously with our clients.
Okay.
And there's more data we don't share yet, but we will, which is, we see which of these operators have stopped distributions.
Yeah.
We see which of them had unexpected capital calls. We see which are performing below or above what they expected from a cash on cash perspective. So that we see all that information.
Yeah.
And we just want to make sure the data is accurate before sharing it with the community, because, you know, I don't want to share data that's wrong. I want to make sure it's accurate, so we don't shed bad light or good light on someone who doesn't deserve it.
Yeah. It's interesting, because there's a number of different platforms where groups are asking me, because I've invested in 24 deals as an LP myself. So I have experience across 10 or 12 different operators, both positive and negative. And there's these third-party applications that are asking me to put information into a portal to create this depository of feedback of investors. And I'm certainly open to sharing the positive news, but most of them don't allow kind of an anonymous functionality to report bad news. And I don't want to be the LP that is reporting bad news and then creating a bad name for myself, even though I think it's important that the community would know that information. So I'd like to find a solution that allows an anonymous reporting of both good and bad, and have your own verification process to make sure that the information is accurate, but a community where that information can be shared, because that can be really valuable. So we have that to a certain extent in GoBundance through some of the tribes that we get to be a part of, but the broader population doesn't seem to have access to that. So that seems like there could be a need provided by your organization as well.
Yeah, and I just want to, you know, I totally agree with what you just said, but it's also important to emphasize most of these are like great communities, all of them. They usually have zero conflict of interest, but it's all dependent on hearsay.
Yeah,
it's not dependent on data. And I don't give a lot of value of, or I don't depend my decisions on hearsay as much as I do on data. Mm-hmm. So if we see data, like we link into bank accounts and we actually see the transactions from the GP to the LP, we see the distributions, we see capital calls. It's not just what they report, it's what actually happens. And so we have the ability to, you know, report the actual performance versus, you know, what was planned. And not just say, hey, this was a bad experience, this was a good one, because that doesn't mean a lot for both sides. Mm-hmm. So I think that's a really important point to emphasize.
Yeah, and I think you're obviously in a unique situation because you can see the data and objectively report on the results. I love the idea of sharing actuals versus performa, or what was presented at least initially. But I think there's a subjective angle to this as well, where you hear a lot of investors, myself included, I would rather take a lower return but have good communication and know what's going on versus having higher returns with bad communication where I'm left on the sidelines kind of in doubt of what's going on. So it seems like you'd have to build that functionality, and maybe that's a qualitative piece as well, where you can see, I suspect, if you're in the portals, you're seeing communications as well. So you can kind of quantify that through communication channels, I guess.
100%. I think that it goes hand in hand with the data.
Yep.
The subjective sort of feeling of that investor from a communication standpoint, interactions and overall impression from that. Yeah, and I totally agree. I don't think that underperforming means it's a bad operator. If it's underperforming and reporting as it should be, I mean, you know, stuff happens. We all invest and we all know the risk that goes into investing. And yeah, some deals go sideways. That doesn't mean they're screwing me over. And I think for all of us, the biggest fear, for there to be fraud, someone to be scamming me, stealing money, you know, not reporting as they should, or hiding, you know, details in the business plan that they didn't even talk about. That's what we're all afraid of.
Yeah.
More than a market, which is happening regardless, but that's a whole, you know, different conversation.
Yeah. But yeah. 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 Interesting. Gosh. I know you didn't get on the podcast to ask for my input or feedback on all of this, but I think the power behind what you're doing is enormous. And the functionality that you could add, you know, through different iterations of this offering could be just amazing. So, you know, we jumped into the weeds right away, but I'm curious, can you share just at a very high level overview what it is that Visor does for those that might have missed that early on? Is it specifically you take, or maybe talk about the avatar or the ideal client that's using this tool and what kind of functionality they can get from it?
Yeah, so the avatar basically is similar to any of your investors, I assume.
Okay.
People that are in the privates that have the complexity, that have, you know, built a crazy spreadsheet or have a personal assistant that's maintaining their spreadsheet. Mm-hmm. Those are the people we're aiming to, you know, solve this problem for, getting rid of that stuff. And the idea is to add as much automation as possible. And we're taking like a family office approach to that, right? So even if we can't integrate with all the investor portals from an API perspective, we'll create a situation where we become interested parties for our clients. So they'll send a document appointing us an interested party. We then reach out to the fund. The fund gives us access to the portal, and then we retrieve the data for them.
Hmm.
We have this magic box, which is a place where you just drag and drop documents, and then they're translated through an AI into data. You know, there's also a team involved helping the AI, because the AI doesn't manage all of it. Hmm. But, you know, spreadsheets and investment statements and K-1s, everything that, and it's translated into data, creating assets or updating existing assets. Then we'll link in your bank accounts, and we'll reconcile all the transactions in your bank and link them to specific assets. You know, this is a distribution to that asset. This is a capital call. This is your cost of living. And all that is basically into one place. You can, you know, track performance, slice and dice the data.
Okay.
And generate reports. So we're now working on a personal financial statement feature where you click a button, and then you receive a report that you can then use to send to a lender. I mean, there's a bunch of aspects to it, but the idea is, you know, this full administrative aspect of a family office for clients that aren't big enough or just don't want a family office.
Yeah. Yeah. That's amazing. So, it seems like you could also, since you're talking about building personal statement of net worth, you could add some accreditation verification process within that tool as well, which would be fairly simple, I would imagine. Yeah, very exciting. So now this is a relatively new business, my understanding, right? It's a few years old, or when did you guys launch? And
we founded the company about 3 years ago, and we launched a product less than a year ago. And the adoption of the market has been amazing and growing. And obviously there are a lot of things we need to add from a product standpoint, mm-hmm. a lot of issues that need to be solved. But overall, the feedback we're getting from our clients and the audience is amazing.
Awesome. And are you comfortable sharing about how many clients there are at this point, or is that a published number?
Yeah, we have a couple thousands of users. And then, you know, part of them are paying clients, part of them are free using the free version of it, because there's a limited aspect to it, and then there's a paid version for it.
Okay.
Well, like I said, we have about $4 billion of assets tracked on the platform at the moment.
$4 billion, unbelievable. Yeah. Fantastic. Okay. Well, very good. It sounds like a great tool. I know I took a look at this when it was, I think it was presented to a group that I participated in, Left Field Investors, which I'm a big fan of what they're doing over there. And I think when it was launched, I took a look at it and I did not go back to it. So I'm sure there's been... you know, pricing adjustments and offering adjustments. So I'll certainly have to get in there and take a look at it. And if our audience wants to find information about it, is it just simply going to visor.com, or is there some other way to find the information?
Yeah, the wording is bad, but it's VYZER.co. So it's visor.co.
Got it.
But it is what it is. You search for Google, yeah. Visor will be the first ones up there, VYZER. But it's cool because it's unique, right? You're not going to get any other thing when you search for that.
Absolutely. Very good. So, yeah, maybe we can shift a little bit. I know you mentioned that you've been an LP in a bunch of deals. You like storage, flips, and lending. What are your thoughts on where the market is today and what we might expect to see in the coming 6 to 9 months or a year? Anything, any specific thoughts there?
That's a very delicate subject, right?
Sure.
I mean, I'm no prophet, but everyone knows we're going to a bad place.
Yeah.
From an economic standpoint. So I think, you know, there's always going to be good investments in every industry. It's going to be harder to find them, meaning it's going to be harder to find good people to invest with. But there definitely is going to be deals. It's just going to be more scarce than it used to be, which I think is a good thing, because in the past few years, say 8 years, has been relatively easy to make money. Mm-hmm. And now it's harder, which that's the way it should be, I think. Interest rates, to be honest, I mean, I'm a nobody, but I don't believe they're going to go down. I believe this is where they are, and this is probably where they're going to stay, because this is a healthy economy at these types of interest rates. You know, 5-6% makes sense. You know, 40 years ago it was 17%, and still people bought houses and made investments. So, I think it's okay, and there'll still be deals. Personally, you know, I'm sitting on cash at the moment. I've done about 30 LP investments over the years. Some have exited, some are still active, with good operators. I'm not worried. But I mean, now when interest rates are so high, at least from a APY standpoint, from a cash deposit savings account, or even not just a high yield checking account, like I'm making 5%. On just cash, liquid cash. Like, it needs to be a freaking good deal for me to go in now, because, you know, the regular multifamily value add type deals that, you know, they were potentially 15-17% IRR and, you know, 7-8% cash on cash. I'm, you know, 5% with zero risk for me at the moment. Mm-hmm. Personally, I feel like I have enough exposure to high risk stuff, you know, my company, some other syndications that I'm in, flips and other stuff. And so I'm fine with getting this 5% until like a really good deal comes by.
Have you looked at any of the debt funds that are out there? Does that interest you?
I have looked at the debt funds. I think they're great. But I still think that I guess 10% is nice. There are these debt funds that's paying 9-10%. For me, it's more, and there are these debt funds, you know, the DLP debt fund, other types of debt funds that have, you know, liquidity, which is a good thing. And I think that that is a good alternative to 5% in a cash save in a high yields cash account. But for me, it's more, I'm looking for like the good operators that are willing to take, you know, risks during this time to find those good deals and to make the higher returns, either on lending stuff, you know, private lending, or development stuff on, you know, flips and equity plays on that front. Got to sit on some cash to see how the market plays out because there's so much uncertainty now.
Okay. Any particular strategies or even operators that kind of have your attention in this market today?
Honestly, I don't feel comfortable talking about any specific operator.
Fair enough. Yep.
I think operators that have been around for a while that have experienced the recession, downturns, are probably a safer bet. Probably the returns will also be on the safer side, meaning lower. I'm you know, because there's no free returns usually. There's no arbitrage there. But
absolutely.
But I think, you know, people that are more looking for the safe side, probably those bigger, more established operators are a good way to go. I'm more on the risk taking side, so I usually prefer the smaller operators.
Sure.
You know, just taking more risk, more potential upside of return. So yeah.
Awesome. Well, yeah, thank you for that. It's as I shared with you before, this podcast is really geared towards the newer past investor. So if you were talking to some peers that were not currently passively investing in deals like these, do you have any advice that you generally share with folks that are just starting to get into this space?
So I think many of the, I don't know, like the passive investors that are new, because there's so many different types of passive investors that are new, but I've heard a lot of, you know, active real estate investors that are looking to be more passive in their investments. And so for them, I think the biggest challenge is to know how to let go and make those returns with doing zero work, even though you're taking a cut on your, you know, what you're used to, but you're also doing zero of the legwork. And I think once you go passive, it's so hard to go back to being active. So I started with two active investments 8 years ago, just single family homes. They were just a crazy, sorry to say, but shit show. And then since then, it's just been passive stuff because I'm generating more returns at zero work. So, I mean, for me, it's like taking that leap and understanding that it's all real estate investing. Being an active investor, a passive investor, it's all real estate investing. And then that spectrum of being passive on it is, for me, the key. To be passive, generating close to similar returns, but doing none of the work.
Yeah.
So that's the way I see it.
No, I think it's great advice. And a lot of folks get into this space because they want to be a little more active. And then you find out pretty quickly that we're better off actually putting our dollars with folks that are full-time professionals in the space that quite often will be able to do much better with it than we could with our limited experience or knowledge in the area. So very good.
Yeah. Just one point on that, just because it's important to emphasize. I'm not saying it's wrong to be active. I just think if there's no potential, like if the returns aren't exponentially higher than passive, then it doesn't make any sense to be that active, right? If you're making more or less the same returns, even like a few basis points more, it does not make sense to be active.
Yeah.
If you're making like 3x what you would have made being passive, obviously, you know, all right, take the risk and be active. But for me, it didn't make any sense.
Yeah. So it sounds like your time and your energy is better spent on growing a business versus, you know, chasing tenants and fixing toilets on a couple of single families.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, very good.
And even I had a property management company on those two properties, and it was still like a lot of work. And I was like, screw this, I'm not doing this anymore.
Yeah, no, I most of the people that have been on my show have the same experience. I have the same experience. And you get into it because you've probably watched too much HGTV and think that you're going to change the world. But boy, it's running single families or even running multifamily, any of these investments are more than a full-time job if you're going to do it right. And it's, in my experience, it's better just to trust the experts and let them be stewards of my dollars while I go do what I do best. So very good. Well, this has been interesting. Anything else you'd care to share with the audience about Visor or where you guys are headed, what to expect from you in the future? Or
yeah, I mean, like I said, we're trying to build this like ultimate solution for passive investors. We like to call like the ultimate family office approach for people that are big enough to have their own family office, big enough to have the complexity. Okay. And adding more functionality and more value. And again, like I'm a client of this. Like my co-founder is as well. We're building this for us. People like us, and we also love all the feedback that our clients are giving us. And so we're here for the long run and trying to build something substantial. And I really appreciate having me on the call.
Yeah, absolutely. It's I'm excited to get back into the tool and take a look at it again. The portfolio has grown to a point where it's getting to where it's unmanageable at this point. So that's where you guys will fill that gap. I'm excited to take a look at it again. But you know, I do have a handful of questions that I like to ask everybody before we wrap up the show. I think I shared with you earlier, but are there any specific educational resources that you think or you would suggest to the newer passive investor, whether that be books or podcasts or any other resources?
I think joining a community like Left Field and similar, you know, GoBundance, like these are really good communities because getting around people that are in the same mindset is really important to get, you know, get it good and make good decisions and learn from other people that have made mistakes.
Okay.
And obviously podcasts, yeah. Right? Yeah. There's a podcast like these, like like there's so much information in these podcasts from people that are a lot smarter than me sharing their experience either as a GP or an LP.
Love it. Okay. And are there actually kind of a fun one, and this is going back to kind of how you and I met, at least initially, is there a recent bucket list item that you've checked off your list or one that you're hoping to in the near future?
Whoa. So a bucket list thing I recently checked off my list is we've just done like a 2.5 month road trip on the Eastern US with me and my wife and my three kids. It was forced, but it was a lot of fun and really good. So that's like okay. Thing we got off the bucket list.
I'm intrigued that it was forced, but I suspect there's a whole different story there. But I bet
I'm from Israel and I was in the US for a few weeks for business and we ended up staying here.
Oh, fantastic.
So we've been here for a few months now, and we've just been road tripping around business and spending time with the family. So
beautiful. Okay. And then one final question I like to ask everybody. If you were to place $100,000 in an investment today and you could not invest it into your business or into any deal that you're personally involved with, where would you place that capital today?
I'd probably lend it to a friend who does flips and has pretty high returns.
I love it. Yep. I think it's a great place. You hear, private money, that term get thrown around a lot. A lot of people don't even know what that is, but that is exactly it. So, really good place to put dollars. It's something that I've wanted to do as well. I've not done it in the flip space. Go ahead.
Yeah, it's hard. It's risky. It's hard to find people that are good at it, that you can trust them, that are paying good terms for it.
Yeah.
It's hard.
Excellent. Well, very good. Well, Litan, I really appreciate you being on the show today. I'm excited to take a look at the product again. Of course, we'll link to your website so all of our listeners can find it. But thank you so much for being on the show.
Thanks, Randy. Appreciate it. This was a lot of fun.
Awesome. All right. And to our listeners, as always, thank you for joining us today. We encourage you to continue that education journey. But more importantly than that, make a decision to invest in your first passive investment. I'm convinced once you do, you'll be so happy that you did and just wish that you had started sooner. So be sure to join us again next Thursday for another great episode. And thank you again for joining us today.
Well, there you have it, ladies and gentlemen, another episode of The Gentle Art of Crushing It. It was an amazing episode. We know we sure learned a lot, and we hope you did as well. We want to take a second and thank you so much for viewing or listening to this episode. And please just know that we only ask for one favor, and that is to make this life magnificent. Thank you, and have a wonderful day.